Our next item is going to be a report from our State Water Board liaison, Mr. Steve Moore. Welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Wolf, Chair Wolf, board members. My name is Stephen Moore. I'm a board member on the State Water Resources Control Board and liaison to the Great Central Coast region of the state. I thought I'd see how many times, you know how when we speak before folks, we always inadvertently use water puns? And so I'm going to see how many I can fit in here today and see if you can catch them.
Do I get a prize?
I laugh because I always catch myself doing it. So I know it's going to happen today, so I'm just warning you. So as usual, I'll go over some budget issues. You know, this is the time of the year where the budget's getting formed for the upcoming year. And talk a little bit about recent activities of the State Board, current activities, because we're kind of midstream in a number of items. Did you catch that one? Yeah, thank you. And some upcoming items, and not a lot, but I'll note one piece of legislation. So on budget, the May revised budget is being worked through this week. The proposal is moving forward, and the water boards are doing quite well this year with a lot of augmentations that we're asking for. There's 20 different budget change proposals, 5 spring finance letters. That's when we send letters to the Department of Finance in the spring. Okay, this could get distracting. And then 3 May revision spring finance letters, but those haven't been released yet to the legislature. So we're talking about 28 different budget proposals that are moving along, and I'll note a couple of them. You know, overall, it's good to remind ourselves that our budget for all the state water boards, the regional water boards, the Division of Drinking Water district offices, is about $1 billion with a B. We have 2,107.9 positions, so a little over 2,100 positions, and so it is a pretty large overall organization, and our budget changes tend to be a little bit around the edges. In terms of regional board augmentations, one key area is the SB 445, which was the underground tank program. Just to give you a shorthand description, it really deals with some of the orphan sites out there and gives us staff to deal with ongoing fuel leak sites that haven't been addressed or in underground contamination. And so this is, and it can be solvents too, it doesn't have to all be fuel. And this has been an important breakthrough, I think, and also thanks to regional board staff level efforts helping us. We have a proposal for $2.4 million and 17 positions statewide to augment this program, which in some ways there's a nice connection with SGMA-type activity, Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, because this can set the stage for resources to be put into contamination cleanup where groundwater storage opportunities may present themselves. So, it's water action plan goals of increasing groundwater storage and having sustainable groundwater from a water quality standpoint. One item that Vice Chair Hunter asked me about, but I know you all have been keeping track of, is the ongoing continuation of drought-related management activities. And in this year's budget, that's still in the Senate. So as I say, we're midstream, with a lot of activities. And on this one, it's a $21.4 million proposal to be allocated into some positions, general fund, cleanup and abatement, et cetera, just to continue the local assistance work we're doing, in terms of providing emergency drinking water and the pathway to permanent solutions for disadvantaged communities and throughout the state. So it's the temporary fixes leading to the long-term fixes. And this story is being told, throughout the state in different places, including here in this region. People ask about the Prop 1 status, and I recently got updated on this and thought I'd share with you that as of May 1st of this year, we've funded 39 projects using burning up about $12 million worth of the Prop 1 funds already. We actually received accelerated bond funding from AB 91, which allowed us to quickly develop program guidelines and solicit projects and start writing the fund agreements. So just a few numbers that might be of interest. In wastewater, we've received 27 applications under Prop 1 around the state, executed 11 of them for totaling ultimately $4.6 million. And there are six that are in the committed stage. So it gives you a sense of the scale statewide. That's just wastewater, about 27, 11, and 6. Drinking water, we've received 62 applications. Nine have been executed for $12 million. Eight are committed for an additional $12 million. In recycled water, we received 41 applications. 17 have been executed. That would total ultimately $85 million, and one is committed for another $5 million. In the stormwater area, we've received 45 planning applications and 66 implementation applications. They're currently all being evaluated for funding, as we are still early in the process. Stormwater was kind of, it was a startup venture because we don't have a lot of existing revenue in the stormwater utility, space in our state, and there's a new law that requires stormwater resource plans to be able to qualify for integrated regional water management funding. So there are these steps that have to be met for the stormwater program to really be getting off the ground and seeing things built in the real world. And then finally, groundwater, it's also a new program to develop, so there's been a lot of outreach. And we're considering the guidelines for the Prop 1 groundwater funding this month. And we've already received 45 pre-applications for the groundwater Prop 1 funding, and it's about $450 million worth of pre-applications. Some recent items. I mentioned last time we met that we'd be taking up a resolution on the human right to water. The law AB 685 that was enacted a few years ago. In this resolution by the State Water Board, we've established the human right to water as a core value. And you can think of that, and it's for all the water boards, it's for the state and regional boards. And we're placing the issue on the same level as all of our other strategic plan goals. So as we at the state board go through the rationale and what type of strategic plan elements that we're implementing through any of our decisions, whether regulatory or funding, we will also consider, does this implement the human right to water? We also passed a resolution directing staff to further refine and recommend statewide consistent definitions for subsistence and tribal beneficial uses of water. And there's been some work done, as you know, in the North Coast. They have the cultural uses of water that's established in their basin plan, and if you're interested in the issue, that's a good place to start. But there has been stakeholder outreach and input to suggested definitions that relate to either cultural use or consumption of fish and shellfish on a dietary level that matches either subsistence or tribal uses. And so that's an ongoing discussion that the state board is supporting. On March 1st, we adopted some performance measures and plans for implementation related to the hydraulic fracturing issue, well stimulation, as it's called. And I think there's another term that's been used. It starts with an F. And so we actually adopted these model groundwater criteria for the hydraulic fracturing back in last year, but we also, as the board, directed staff to come up with performance measures for the program. And so on March 1st, those performance measures were brought before us and will help track. And they relate a lot to public availability of data, meeting water quality goals over time, and having an annual check-in with the State Water Board on how the program's going. And that's been a lot of stakeholders have been involved in that. And we're going to probably bring these performance measures back periodically and evaluate through that open stakeholder process. On March 15th, we had in the financing side of the House, we issued, working with the California Infrastructure and Economic Development Bank, also known as IBANC, we issued up to $500 million in aggregate principal amount of bonds through the IBANC to augment the state revolving fund program for both drinking water and wastewater. You know, we took some risk to do this against the fund, but as our head of our Division of Financial Assistance told us earlier this week, you know, that was in March, we got the message today, this week that, quote, we did fabulously well on our recent leveraged bond sale for the, it was most of the clean water SRF program. And you know, the total interest rate on all our borrowing when all costs are considered comes to about 2.1%. And that's favorable. It's very close to what the going rate now is, about 1.67%. And so overall, just the report is really good. And the fact that we had a green bond designation, that we're supporting green projects, you know, through water infrastructure, it was considered by 13 investors who placed $60 million in orders. You know, explicitly denoted that's why they want to invest. And so this sort of, you know, socially or environmentally beneficial investments. So it caught on. And so it was a big success, and we're excited about that because this is really, it's going to help fuel the engine for all of the infrastructure upgrade needs that relate to so much of what we do in the wastewater, drinking water, but, you know, in looking to the future in stormwater and infrastructure with drainage and flood control. Now, as I mentioned currently, and I want to just say something positive about on April 5th, you know, we approved the TMDL that was here out of this region for the Pajaro River nutrients, and it was notable that there were no comments on the item to the state board. So, you know, why was there even the state board process, right, you know, for approval? Well, it was done so well, you know, and I think you're refining the nutrient TMDL approach here in this region that stakeholders didn't feel like they had to comment on it. So I complimented staff. Sorry they had to drive all the way to Sacramento just to see us adopt the order without comment, but it doesn't mean we don't appreciate all the hard work. So currently there's two fairly large items that we're dealing with. One is the petition of the East San Joaquin Coalition's waste discharge requirements from the Central Valley region that you all are aware of, as we took up a petition order for this region back in 2013. This petition order, we have a draft on the streets that the comments are due on now on June 1st. And we had a workshop on May 4th to hear from several panels representing different perspectives on the irrigated lands discharge order from the Central Valley. We state in the draft order that it will be precedential, and so therefore we're receiving comment from throughout the state, of course, the diverse Central Valley itself, because this particular order is just for the East San Joaquin Coalition, but obviously the other coalitions would be affected by the language that's proposed. We're having a second workshop on next Tuesday, which is May 17th, in Fresno, actually. The State Water Board's holding the hearing there to receive comment, and we're trying to make sure that we provide enough time for public comment since we're traveling down there. And so that there are many issues in that. It's ongoing, and ultimately, our target is to try to have an adoption of the order in the August-September timeframe of this year. It takes into account many factors, not just the substance of the petitions, but also the petition order that we issued pertaining to this region, litigation that's occurred in this region, our expert panel on agricultural discharge management and their guidance, the Nitrogen Tracking Task Force from the California Department of Food and Agriculture. And so we're trying to meld all of the different guidance into this draft order, as well as substantial input so far that we've received. So it's an important order. We're keeping you clearly in mind in your program here, as well as the Central Valley and Los Angeles and other regions that have significant agriculture. So you may have heard that the governor issued an executive order this week on May 9th, making water conservation a California way of life. And this was helpful to us as we were grappling with the changing hydrology of the state and the emergency from 2015 and trying to reconcile all these different factors in the current emergency regulations for water use that affect urban users throughout the state. And we had a workshop on April 20th where we received significant input on how we might modify the current emergency regulations, which were readopted in February of this year, to continue but refine mandatory urban conservation standards that were percent reductions in water use relative to 2013. Now we've, at the same time as this executive order was released, which charts more of a path toward long-term conservation and efficiency standards. Concurrent with that rollout this week, we released proposed draft regulatory changes to the urban conservation regulations that were emergency regulations. We are going to be considering those changes based on the input we received and the changing hydrology this coming Wednesday, May 18th. In essence, the proposal is to remove the mandatory conservation standards, but have a self-certification process from the 411-odd water purveyors that have more than 3,000 connections in our state to look at their water supply through the lens of 3 years into the future, assuming that they have the same hydrology that we had the previous 3 years before this year. That is 3 dry years in a row, 2013, 2014, and 2015. What this will do will take into account how water supply is sometimes independent of local drought conditions because of investments that have been made or water savings that have been accomplished through conservation and other ways of maintaining supply. So it sounds complicated, but it involves a self-certification process with some conservative assumptions about supply. And then what happens is the conservation standard that applies to a specific water supply agency or entity is self-developed based on the shortage that would be predicted if we had 3 additional dry years. So there'd be a percent remaining relative to demand reduction that would need to be done. So it will be interesting to see what we get. You know, it's going to vary widely. And, you know, I know from my experience in the Bay Area, if you just go to the next jurisdiction over, the water supply mix is completely different. It might be park groundwater. It might be coming in from some aqueduct, local reservoirs, and some recycled water. It's all very different from Napa to Marin to Sonoma to San Francisco, as you can imagine. And we have a lot of diversity in this region as well. So there's much to say about this. We're going to be hearing about our proposal. There were other ideas about just going to voluntary like we did in 2014, but now we have a proposal on the street that we're going to consider next Wednesday. So that's for the emergency regs. But then the long term that the governor spoke about in his executive order, and it's pretty well written. It's a four-pager. It's worth taking a look at. It sets forth some roles for the state water board, not the regional water boards, but in terms of maintaining an eye on recommendations for long-term efficiency and conservation that we'll be taking up in the January 2017 timeframe. Okay. I've been up here for a while. Let's see. Real quickly about some things that are coming up. We're going to be considering a statewide general order for water recycling requirements for recycled water use that would apply at every regional board in June. and we're taking up drinking water regulations because with the transfer of the drinking water program to us from the Department of Public Health, there was some financial shortfalls and that we need to make up with increased fees. And so we're going to be taking up that controversial issue in June as well about making the program whole. We're starting the process of adopting an MCL, a maximum contaminant level, for the chemical 1,2,3 trichloropropane, 1,2,3 TCP. And it's a commonly found, it's a contaminant, human-made contaminant found in some contaminated groundwater associated with oil operations and other industries. And it's kind of a byproduct almost, not necessarily the main product. An ingredient. And I can't really tell you the details on that, but it's just found enough. And yet, without an MCL, there isn't enough drive to do cleanups. And so the MCL needs to be adopted to spur on some needed cleanups of contaminated groundwater that affects some disadvantaged communities. In July, we're going to take up the wetland area protection dredge and fill permitting policy, or the wetland policy, as a workshop. And alongside that, water quality certification for small habitat restoration projects to try to, you know, simplify the regulatory process for folks who want to do the right thing and get more habitat, more watershed functions in the environment. And around that time, July, we're proposing to open, we have a petition from Cal-Am and the Monterey Peninsula to open up the Carmel River Order and modify the deadlines and deliverables for implementing the water supply solutions for that area so that the Monterey Peninsula won't exceed their diversion limits from the Carmel River. So they've petitioned us to open that up because there is a deadline to meet the diversion reductions by the end of this year. And so that process will begin in July. And we'll be having a six-month stormwater strategy update in August. So I just remind you that your staff have been really critical and helpful in getting our stormwater strategy together from the regional board perspective here to the state board, as well as some other regions. And so we're continuing to move that forward, recognizing stormwater as a resource. And just about done. On legislation, it's kind of early in the year to get into the nitty-gritty, but our staff are diligently working on a lot of proposals. One example is proposed SB 1263 from Witkowski. Includes provisions designed to help limit the proliferation of new unsustainable drinking water systems, as proposed in our affordable safe drinking water framework that we're developing at the State Water Board. That one implements some of our recommendations. And I've covered a lot of ground, but, of course, really not in great depth. I apologize if you have many questions still. But with that, I think the flow of the spigot has stopped, and we can we can entertain any questions.
Hey, that one counts.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Can I just ask you to take another moment. The last item, SB 1263,
mm-hmm.
Prevention of new unsustainable drinking water systems, is that in relationship to new development or what is, I've never heard the term unsustainable drinking water system.
Yeah, it is in relation to new development. And there are some different kinds of examples around the state. One of the most glaring examples to me is near where I grew up in Los Angeles, on the kind of the suburban fringe. They may not be able to prove up the water to supply to these new developments, and so they'll propose trucking in water as the permanent supply. So it's hauled water, as they call it. So that's an example of unsustainable. But as you know that. If new developments are contemplated in a county, you know, unincorporated county type framework, they may not have thought about, you know, the sustainability of the water supply, and then this will highlight that. Our drinking water division tries to stay vigilant on this, but sometimes needs a little extra, authority to be able to say no or go back to the drawing board in terms of figuring out, you know, connecting to an adjacent community that already has a system versus drilling your own 100-foot deep wells that may go dry, you know, through time. So, you know, along those lines, there is folks have been interested in the consolidation concept, you know, which relates to this. You know, is it going to be a new system or are you going to connect to an existing system, which might be more expensive? You know, that would be the issue. But I did mean to let you know that on March 29th, we issued our first ever mandatory consolidation order under the new rules, SB 88. So I wanted to tell you that today. And it was issued to the city of Tulare and for the consolidation of the Pratt Mutual Water Company within the county. And it's sort of one of these, you know, right adjacent water supplies that's not meeting standards. And then you have the city who is, and for whatever reasons, they're not connecting up this adjacent community. So, you know, that's an example of an unsustainable water system. It's not health. It doesn't meet public health standards. And there's an obvious solution sitting right next door. And so through our authorities on SB 88, we're beginning the process through this consolidation order. And it doesn't just happen. You know, we have requirements under SB 88 to really conduct a thorough process with stakeholder input and ultimately hopefully culminate into the common sense solution that's needed.
If I can follow on with that, we have, and you're aware of this, Dr. Hunter, we have a number of disadvantaged communities that fit Mr. Moore's description that we're trying to work with municipalities. You've seen San Vicente as an example just outside of Soledad. We're trying to work with DDW, you know, bring them to light, those situations to light with DDW, such that they can use that authority to bring those little satellites into the system.
And there, alongside, there's a lot of voluntary consolidations going on around the state. So this is really the first time we've issued a mandatory order. You know, many communities opt wisely, I think, to get the processes underway on their own. But if they're not able to, you know, we can provide a little extra motivation.
Thank you. Mayor Delgado, you may.
Good morning. Thank you. Steve, thank you for always your really good, thorough presentations. Regarding the petition of the East Side and Joaquin's Coalition, what, if any, effect would that have on our current and future ag orders here at the Central Coast?
I won't answer that really with great detail, although many in the room would be listening very closely to what I will say. We're underway right now with the workshops and receiving input. But in the draft order currently, it does indicate that this is proposed to be precedential. So on this higher level, it would affect this and other regions, irrigated lands, agricultural orders. And I'm looking at legal, making sure I'm not overstepping my bounds. We're good.
Would it affect our current order?
My understanding is it would be in the reissuance stage, whether you would choose to do the waiver approach or a waste discharge requirements approach. And Jessica, do you want to add anything to that?
There we go. Okay. If the board would have to make changes to the ag order to comply with the Eastern San Joaquin order, whenever it did become final, to the extent that there are requirements that differ from the requirements that we currently have, due to the fact that we have a renewal that is coming up, most likely instead of reopening our old ag waiver, we would simply include it in any renewal.
Would it accelerate the need for a reissuance in our region?
I don't believe so.
We already have a pretty tight time frame. The existing order expires in March 2017, so we're inside of a year already.
I know the history of the ag orders include a lot of extensions or continuances. So with this with this presidential issue, accelerate ours and result in less likely continuations?
There won't be a continuation of the current ag order. There will be something in front of the board by March of next year. What that will contain has not been determined yet. But it will not simply be a administrative extension with nothing else.
So you're predicting that what we've seen occur in the past won't occur again as far as continuances?
That is what we are working to have something in front of the board by March of next year.
Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Young.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Moore. So taking off on that then, precedential, is that term being used for the entire order itself, or is it being used for selective portions of the order at this point in time?
I don't know.
At this point, I believe it's the entire order.
I think it's the entire order because, you know, we want to avoid confusion. And really, we're trying to use this process to roll up, many issues that have been ongoing, whether here in this region or the Central Valley region or even the other regional boards. And so, you know, to try to create clarity moving forward and consistency with needed regional flexibility, that's the intent of this precedential order, is really to answer many questions for expectation.
Okay. And backing up a little bit, who is issuing the bonds on the that are being issued? This came up in the beginning of your presentation.
Yeah,
is it the State Water Resources Control Board?
It's the iBank is the entity that issues them, but we've authorized it against using the Clean Water State Revolving Fund, you know, as the leverage for the bond.
Is the leverage or the source of revenue to pay off the bonds?
That's what I mean, really. There's a value there. There's a AAA rating, and I can't tell you the actual total amount off the top of my head, but that revenue stream and that track record then allowed us to issue this bond. We've actually authorized up to $1.2 billion with a B. And this was the first implement of $500 million. And this is because of the demand on the system. There's been a large project in Sacramento that's sort of the tipping point, but there's other large projects on the way. And looking ahead, we just didn't have the cash flow to keep the program as it was. So we needed to issue this bond to augment our ability to run the system at kind of a higher level.
And the system is the cleanup and abatement program?
The Clean Water State Revolving Fund, which is seeded by federal money through the Clean Water Act and the EPA. But then we collect interest to keep the fund going and to make it available as much as we can to the disadvantaged communities too, with lower interest rates.
You mentioned water conservation regulations, both emergency ones and then kind of long-term ones. Are these regulations still at this point only focused on urban water use?
Yes, they are. But the long-term, that's on the emergency. But the long-term efficiency standards in the governor's executive order also include agricultural use and eliminating water waste, such as water leaks in drinking water systems, distribution systems. So it goes beyond just, the residential use as well. And now we're getting, we were really focused on outdoor use during the summer as a low-hanging fruit to achieve aggressive reductions. And it was successful. I mean, I didn't mention it, but the final tally was 23.9% that the state achieved relative to 2013 water use levels. So that's like one drop in four, if you think of it that way. That's pretty amazing, almost 25%. So That was really focused on that type of discretionary, non-essential use. The order that the governor issued this week deals with the full range, including agricultural water efficiency and lowering the acreage threshold for the development of agricultural water management plans that the Department of Water Resources will be the lead on, and working with CDFA and implementing with irrigation districts around the state. But there's also a component about commercial, industrial, and institutional water use efficiency that's in the governor's executive order. So that's an augmentation, because we didn't, in our emergency regulations, we didn't look at what we referred shorthand as economic water, you know, the water that leads to jobs in communities, like a food processing plant, or maybe public health water, like in a desert community where water is used in swamp coolers to keep temperatures down and avoid heat-related illness. And so, you know, there were exceptions that we discovered as we implemented these regulations. And so the long-term efficiency standards will address those issues a little more comprehensively.
So with respect to ag, I'm curious whether these long-term regs, other than mentioning no waste of water, are going to get into attempting to even tell farmers what modes of application of water, you know, might be wasteful.
Yeah, I believe, you know, we don't have direct experience in working with the agricultural water management plans. That's our sister agencies, and they are going to continue to do it. My understanding is those questions do come up and are asked, you know, about, and there is a fairly brisk pace of agricultural water efficiency implementation in our state in terms of converting to drip irrigation where appropriate, or refining sprinkler irrigation and using technological innovation. So embedded within this process of agricultural water management plan, water efficiency plans, I presume that those questions are asked, and that folks challenge themselves to recommend, you know, the appropriate, most efficient water use in agricultural settings.
Is the State Water Board going to be at all involved in those long-term regs, or is it primarily DWR?
Yeah, again, our role is a little bit more in the urban sector in terms of pivoting from the percent reduction approach of the emergency regulations to more of a long-term performance standard approach, where we ask the question, what's a reasonable level of indoor water use given, you know, the trends that we're seeing per capita? What's a reasonable amount of outdoor use in different climates of the state, depending on how large, you know, the yard is and all these other factors? And local water agencies are already looking into this. Some are farther ahead than others. And so we're and then also we're going to be working on the water loss through leaks as well, working alongside Department of Water Resources. So our interface is more with the water purveyors. And then and we won't forget that the California Public Utilities Commission will be the lead in dealing with investor-owned water utilities. And okay. So we'll be working in parallel.
Right. Thank you very much.
And I think Mr. Mayor Delgado had a question, and then Ms. Gray after that. Okay.
All right. Thank you. I forgot to ask earlier regarding the California American Water cease and desist order you mentioned being petitioned to modify for some extensions. On a weekly basis, I get a few emails from citizens that are bulldogging this process, and I wanted to ask you if their assessment is off track or on track, which is that the sort of economic Armageddon predicted if they were not able to meet their deadline of, which of course they can't, you know, next year, to cut back on their overdraft of the Carmel River, that they would be forced to cut back so drastically that there'd be no water for businesses and hotels, and residents would have to cut back much more than they already have. The citizens are saying that would never happen. Instead, Cal-Am would simply pay some fines, and that paying those fines for the continued overdraft in the end would be much less expensive than implementing the most expensive Cal-Am proposal, instead waiting and so that one of a competing desal project could be built very soon so that the fines wouldn't have to be levied for very long. Have you heard that argument, and what is the State Board's perspective on that argument, if you've heard it?
Well, I'm familiar with that. Yeah, along in terms of the different input that we received along the way, all very informal at this point. And so, I mean, it's hard for me to really comment on that too much. I will just assure everyone that and of course I'm just one board member of five, right? And we haven't made any decisions, but we are agendizing the petition. To gather this type of input, to have an understanding of those type of dynamics, what is the timetable of proposed projects to achieve, not overdrafting the Carmel River, and what's a reasonable, accountable, type timetable that we can set up in any revised order, if it's needed. We'll look at it we'll look at it very plainly alongside what you just described. If no action's taken, what type of fines would be required and all that, and trying to balance, and look at these as alternatives, because right now no decision is made, and we really want to kickstart the discussion and get these different perspectives in front of us, and then come up with a recommendation.
So I sort of hear you saying that. The argument that I presented, that I relayed, that others have made, may or may not hold water, and it will be one of many opinions evaluated during this process coming up.
That's right, and I really want to compliment you on using the water pun in your description.
I didn't know I did.
He gets partial credit.
He gets partial credit. So, I'm familiar with that question. And, I'm interested in knowing more about it. I just don't know enough, in terms of comparing the alternatives at this time. And so as a board member, I'm going to take it seriously, as well as other perspectives on this.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Gray?
So I just have a simple question. I'm also happy to hear that SB 1263 is advancing. But I know you just released the EO. Could you give me some insight into what your timetable is in terms of what's longer term? Is that 20 years? Is that 10 years? What's the time horizon?
Yeah, we do have, in terms of the order and what our work plan, our workload, or, the expectations are. And actually, there has been some budget proposals that, I was mentioning earlier, the augmentation of staff has, we have received some in this area in terms of regulating on water efficiency. But reading from the executive order, the governor says to prepare for the possibility of another dry winter, the water board shall also develop by January 2017 a proposal to achieve a mandatory reduction in potable urban water usage that builds off of the mandatory 25% reduction called for back in 2015. So, if we're getting another one of these November Decembers that there's no precipitation like we saw in 2013, something could kick in terms of another emergency type effort. The Department of Water Resources working with the Water Board to develop new water use targets as part of a permanent framework for urban water agencies is the second bullet, and it talks about those issues we were discussing. And we're supposed to consult with the suppliers and local governments and environmental groups, other partners, and develop water use targets and publicly issue a proposed draft framework by January 10th, 2017. And so that'll be an active area this year. And then there's a general statement about permanently requiring urban suppliers to issue the monthly report on their water usage, amount of conservation achieved, and any enforcement efforts. So it's making permanent the system that we got up and running to make the emergency regs work, in terms of having that data availability, and the media was used that extensively in the last couple of years, and so that's been seen as sort of as a success, you know, of the program that we got. We have consistent statewide data now. So there are a couple of, you know, time, the January we have a couple of due dates.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Johnson.
You mentioned in passing a cultural beneficial use of water. Now, is that a new beneficial use? Is that a what's the status of that? I'm curious. First, I've heard of it.
No, that's good. In North Coast, Regional Board did adopt the cultural beneficial use of water, and encouraged by the many tribes in that region and the dependence on the salmonid fisheries, and but also not just for consumption of salmon, or just to having the presence of them for their culture and sacred rites, but also that's the consumption and the presence of water actually at certain times of the year, so they can do certain practices that relate to in the Klamath River, some of the reeds that grow in certain elevations with certain water flows, and those type of complexities. So that was enacted in the North Coast, and there's an interest statewide to have a consistent definition that regional boards can opt to include in their basin plans.
So then is the state board working on a consistent definition? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, through this resolution, we recognize the input of stakeholders, and they had some draft definitions, and we put as an attachment to the resolution. But we're directing staff to develop them further, engage more stakeholders, because it wasn't, you know, there has been some concern. It was just maybe 10 tribes that were actively involved, and we have many more than that in the state.
So if I could add to that, in the March board meeting that I realized you were not able to attend, we had a viewing of Thirsty for Justice, and that beneficial use was actually referenced in that movie with regards to efforts, environmental justice efforts in the North Coast region. If you ever get a chance to view it, I think you can access it online.
Can I follow up comment on that?
Okay.
Just to follow up to what you just said, John, and I'll be as brief as I can, that video spurred some discussion amongst our board members about what we might do in that regard. And I think the answer from staff was they'll take a look at it. Any progress on that front?
Primarily on the development of a schedule for bringing a human right to water resolution to the board, not as much on the specific item, a tribal beneficial use designation. We haven't made much progress on that right now.
Okay. If I may supplement your answer, that also prompted a follow-up with Ms. Kennedy, where yesterday Dr. Hunter gave a update on, and I supplement a little bit of information on that, where we're increasing the area coverage that we're looking at to identify disadvantaged communities, and we were looking at the southern part of our region where we have been in the past focusing in the northern part of our region. So those actions were prompted by the meeting we had, and also looking at how to reach out to these folks and then utilizing consultants who are bilingual and also familiar with the process of trying to reach out to, you know, individuals. So got to stay tuned on that. There is a proposal being worked right now that the staff is reviewing and identifying grants to fund this consulting service.
And Mayor Delgado, I took a note. Well, I'll check in on that and we'll get back.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
You bet.
Yeah, and just to follow up, because I did take a moment to ask Mr. Moore, in a broader context, as part of our effort and a process for advancing what we know about disadvantaged communities, one of the things that we have often discussed since this issue began to elevate in our awareness is the fact that there are few options that are in the short-term sense giving us actions that we can take to assist communities. So we value the work at the State Board because they've done tremendous work to open up new pathways for disadvantaged communities to be eligible for support, including not only financial but technical assistance. So my question to him was, you know, are we looking forward to, in addition to what's already been accomplished, are we looking forward to new legislation that may also hold opportunities that we want to, in this region, we certainly want to be aware of and track and see, you know, the success of these bills going forward?
Yeah, we'll certainly be keeping an eye on it. It's a very active area of discussion. The governor's office is involved. Many stakeholders, are not just in this region, but in Central Valley and other. So it's an active area that we're continuing to be a part of. And our staff, Liz Haven, has really shown a lot of leadership in this area. And it's an ongoing issue. Everyone's aware of about the funding for operation and maintenance of these facilities in disadvantaged communities. And active area discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Moore.
Thank you.
So as always, we appreciate your comprehensive updates.
Thank you.
Mr. Robertson?
Yes, I had just one more question for Mr. Moore. Sorry to let you get away. Probably easy. With respect to the prevention of new unsustainable drinking water systems, is the criteria for that primarily quantity, or does it incorporate quality as well?
I'm fairly certain it's both.
Okay.
You know, that
yield and quality, right?
Yeah.
Right.
If there's chromium 6 or arsenic,
right.
Or,
if know, there's plumes in the way,
and yeah, it can be plumes. It can be naturally occurring contaminants, but yeah, it has to be part of that. Yes.
And at your request, I kept a tally of your punts. You get 3 points. Mayor Delgado, 0.5 point.
Yeah. Actually, I kind of fell short.
And Mr. Johnson gets a full point.
So, one other item I'm going to try to get my score a little higher here. Early in the flow of Mr. Moore's presentation, he mentioned SB 445. I just wanted to let the board know, and Mr. Moore, there's kind of two components to 445. There is the budget change proposal that is proposing 17 new positions at the state and regional boards. There's also a component that allows usage of the underground tank cleanup fund for non-underground tank cleanups, such as solvent cleanups. Your staff has applied for SB 445 funding for the Buckley Road TCE plume that we discussed yesterday. And I'll be sending you some supplemental information just to help us along the way of trying to get access to that funding. It's a priority cleanup site that's impacted a bunch of domestic wells in San Luis Obispo County.
Oh, great. Yeah, I mean, I think that's very much part of the spirit of the legislation.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.